Greetings to the brightest audience in the country. I am Bob Enyart, the pastor of Denver Bible Church, and welcome to another edition of Real Science Friday. And who's this in the studio?
Well, my name's Fred Williams, software engineer and creation speaker.
And Fred, you're the webmaster for the esteemed Creation Research Society. It's such an honor to have you in studio. And you and I are going to go through this publication, Creation Magazine, and it's a beautiful magazine.
Very good magazine, lots of great articles, graphics, and we highly recommend it. It's a great witnessing tool, too.
Yeah, it really is, to tell people about God and creation and that we didn't evolve from slime, from animals. And so, Fred, if we could start, there's so many fabulous facts, science facts in this magazine. I'm thinking of, on page 7, starting with this discussion of the sponge, textbook. Classic evolution textbooks say that, well, basically, evolution progressed from pond scum to people, and the first of the multi-celled animals to appear was the sponge.
Yeah, and they claim it was a simple organism.
A simple sponge.
A simple sponge.
So these are the ideas for decades before we had electron microscopes and before we could study DNA. And so all these really superficial connections and predictions were made. Oh, look, that looks like that, so that must have evolved from this creature over here. And so the simple sponge is the simplest. Now they're studying the DNA. So how does the DNA match up with that prediction that it was the simple sponge? Does it turn out that that was a reasonable prediction?
Well, it appears not. In fact, the title of the article is "This was a complete shocker to the evolutionists." They said it was so shocking that we initially thought something had gone very wrong. Well, what was the problem? Their DNA sequence study showed that what's at the base of the animal tree of life is not the sponge, but something called the comb jelly.
The comb jelly. And so what's happening is the evolutionists make predictions. They make predictions on a false assumption that this creature, this species evolved into this species, evolved into this species. And if that's true, then you should be able to see some kind of progression in the DNA instead of these very superficial and shallow predictions based on the shapes of the bodies and the apparent complexity. And it turns out that their predictions are not correlating to actual DNA hard science.
That's right. I mean, these comb jellies, they have a nervous system, connective tissue, so they have to be, they are more complex, but it's still an illusion for them to claim that the sponge is simple, because the sponge is remarkably complex. Far more complex than the shuttle spacecraft.
Than the space shuttle.
But they're,
so a sponge is more complex than the space shuttle.
That's right.
Yeah, as far as
and so now they find
and sophistication and all.
That's right. And the DNA didn't match up with what they wanted to be true, was that this thing they thought is simple compared to other organisms would be at the base of the tree. Well, it's not. According to their studies, this comb jelly should be at the base of the tree. And again, they said it was completely shocking, and they thought something had gone very wrong,
yeah,
to quote them.
And that's why in this magazine they have a little letter to the editor from a Fred from Colorado, USA. This is published out of Australia, this Creation magazine, creationontheweb.com. But Fred, you're not this Fred, right? You're Fred Williams.
I am not this Fred.
This is Fred Zobel. And he said for 15 years, he's put a Darwin fish on the back of his car, but he did it in a funny way.
Yeah, he did it upside down.
Upside down, because dead fish flow upside down, and so he's just got the Darwin fish upside down.
Didn't you do something funny with a Darwin fish on your website?
Yeah, we did. We have a Richard Dawkins, world's most famous atheist evolutionist, was interviewed by Ben Stein in his great movie Expelled, and they're Expelled, the intelligent design movement, is saying when you look at the complexity of life, it's obvious there was a designer. It couldn't just happen by chance. And they get fired from universities. They get blackballed. They can't publish articles. Real intense persecution. So they interview at the end of the movie. Ben Stein interviews Richard Dawkins in England. And he comes on and he says, well, I suppose if you look at the evidence from molecular biology, you might conclude that life did originate somewhere out there. Some intelligent designer might have made life on Earth. And it's like, no kidding, Richard.
He gets that idea. It's called panspermia, and it originated from Francis Crick, who was a co-discoverer of DNA. Francis Crick was a committed atheist. He wasn't going to give up on his atheist religion. But when he discovered that the DNA was actually a code, like a computer program, that is such overwhelming evidence, since information science says you cannot have a code without intelligence, that he said that neo-Darwinism, which is a current paradigm of evolutionary thinking, he said that neo-Darwinism cannot possibly be true. But because he was a committed atheist, he said that aliens must have seeded the planet with this DNA information. So all he did, Bob, was he pushed the problem back in time and into space.
Right.
But it's such a silly idea. And Dawkins, surprisingly, during this
interview, embraced
that idea.
And all they're doing is punting. They're not answering.
Oh, yeah. Fourth and long for them.
Yeah. Because if chemical processes could not develop DNA on Earth, because of how wildly complex it is, and you need the sophistication of the cell to maintain the DNA, and you can't have the sophistication of the cell without the instructions in the DNA. So they need one another. And so that system, that codependent, sophisticated system, could not develop in piecemeal, part by part, and it's too sophisticated to develop by chance processes and chemical reactions. So if it can't happen on Earth, it can't happen on Mars, it can't happen off of Alpha Centauri, it just, the same arguments against it happening here apply out there.
That's right.
It's just so silly. Martians did it.
Yeah, or Vulcans or Klingons.
Yeah, right. So Richard Dawkins admits it, and he said, but he added, but of course, whatever higher intelligence out there in the universe designed life on Earth, it too presumably came from some type of Darwinian mechanism. Oh, presumably. It's just silly. So even the sponge and the jellyfish, these things, they indicate that there is no evolutionary progression between these creatures.
That's right.
All right. Next article is about Box Canyon in Idaho. And I've got a list here of similar admissions from evolutionist geologists. But Fred, what are they saying about the Box Canyon? Now, it, like so many other canyons, it formed slowly over millions of years, right? That's how it happened?
That's how they believed it used to happen, but the evidence is so overwhelming that this had to have happened rapidly. And based on evidence, for example, there's complete removal of large basalt boulders from the canyon.
Right. Exactly.
And so, Bob, I'm wondering if evolution in millions of years is true, did the little water, little by little, the stream kind of somehow push these boulders out of the canyon?
Well, Science Magazine, May of this year, 2008, May 23rd, they acknowledged, and they're evolutionists, evolutionary geologists, Darwinists, old Earth folks, they acknowledged that the Box Canyon in Idaho formed rapidly, not over millions of years, but over weeks. They think maybe as little as 35 days. And for example, there are huge plunge pools that formed by waterfalls. And there's an eroded notch on the plateau at the top of the canyon. And there are water scour marks on the basalt plateau leading to the canyon. And so what's interesting is all this evidence, and so they've now acknowledged this didn't take millions of years. It happened cataclysmically as a result of a flood. They say that this has now been confirmed by experiments and field studies. So it didn't take millions of years. It took about 35 days.
Yeah, they estimate 35 days, so that's quite a bit of difference.
And that's the evolutionary geologist. And, Fred, I'm making a little list of my own, where the atheist and evolutionist are taking things that they said happened over millions of years and saying, oops, we were wrong. It happened in a year or a few months or weeks or days or even hours. The Heart Mountain Detachment up near Yellowstone, you recall
we talked about that a couple shows ago.
Yeah, massive mountain that broke apart into 50 pieces scattered over tens of square miles. And they used to say, of course, it happened over millions of years. And now they say, you know, Nature and Science magazine, well, it might have happened in about 2 hours.
That's right. And, you know, we get, it seems like every time we do a Creation magazine or a journal, we get another example of a geologic process that was supposed to be millions of years old. And that they're admitting the evidence shows was much
was
quicker.
Rapid. And these are the evolutionists and geologists admitting these things. You know, the petrified trees at Yellowstone deposited in a dozen different strata, and they used to say each of those layers of strata took, you know, millions of years between the layers, and forest evolved, and then they died out, and one or two trees in each layer remained and was petrified. And it's so weird that that unusual process would happen, you know, a dozen times over on the same hillside in Yellowstone.
But and then, what was wrong with the trees?
Right, the trees had no root systems. The trees, the roots were abruptly broken off. They had been knocked over in some cataclysm, transported in water, and they all sunk there. As those sediments were being laid down, all those trees sunk in the same basic type of geologic environment, which is why a bunch of them petrified. It was a similar happenstance for all those trees rapidly.
And we have a very similar example that happened in 1983, I believe it was, when Mount St. Helens erupted. At the bottom of Spirit Lake, you had all these logs that became waterbound, and they sunk to the bottom.
Yeah.
And they, too, were transported there. And, you know, Bob, 200 years from now, maybe they're going to have a sign at Mount St. Helens of this petrified forest of these trees that were buried over millions of years.
And it all happened after 1980.
That's right.
Yeah. And so at Yellowstone, they took down the sign. The National Park Service took down the sign that said these trees were grew here in situ, right in this location, over millions of years of forest formation. That sign is down because it's not true, and creationists applied the pressure to take that sign down.
Well, speaking of signs, didn't the sign at Carlsbad Cavern evolve over
Carlsbad Cavern in New Mexico. My family and I, we've been there. We've been to many of these locations. And our boys, our three boys, Zachary, Dominic, and Michael, the youngest ones, with Cheryl, we took the tour, and they used to have a sign out there, 235 million years to form this cavern or whatever. And then that was gone, and 20 million, then 2 million. Now the sign is just gone. And the official tour narrative says this. It says, how long did these formations take to form? It depends on how much water is available. And that's true, because man-made tunnels produce stalactites and stalagmites in very rapid fashion if there's water dripping through the right kind of sediments.
Yeah, and one of the scientists at Rocky Mountain Creation Fellowship, Bill Browning, told me of a case where he's gone to Dinosaur National Monument over the years, and I was actually there with him the last time he went. And I don't know, 20 years ago, he said that they were saying that the dinosaurs that are buried there died against the bank of a river, and then over time, over slow processes, that these dinosaurs became fossils. And then 10 years later, he goes there again.
On a bank of a river.
10 years later, the tour guide had a different story. This time it's, well, these animals were buried rapidly in some kind of local flood of some sort. Well, this last time we were out there, which was a couple of years ago, I was there when the park ranger said that all these dinosaur bones were buried by some kind of cataclysmic flood.
Right.
So we're getting them closer and closer to Noah's flood.
Right.
I don't think they're going to want to admit to Noah's flood because then they'd be, you know, confirming the Bible.
Right. But geologists who traveled around the world just a couple centuries ago saw all this and said, these are obviously features formed by floods and catastrophe, cataclysm. And then the evolutionary pressure and to deny God, that was the motivation, said, oh no, these things happen over slow processes over millions of years. And those slow processes don't form the features we see all over the earth. They just, the dramatic features, they don't form them.
Well, before the show, Bob, we were talking about the jellyfish, and that would be jumping ahead. It's later in this magazine.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, Darwin made a prediction that no organism, this is actually the exact quote, no organism wholly soft can be preserved.
Right.
Well, we have plenty of examples now, and we have this, we have jellyfish that we find preserved in the fossil record, these soft tissued organisms.
Beautifully soft, beautifully preserved jellyfish, and they haven't changed over millions of years.
No.
And in the Midwest, there's a quarry where, you know, the layers of the quarry, of course, were laid down over millions of years. That's what they say. But lo and behold, they found seven layers containing jellyfish fossils, beautifully fossilized, preserved. And it's rare to get jellyfish fossils because they are soft-bodied creatures. And here they are over seven layers in this one little area. What did the jellyfish have a reunion every 400,000 years? And they just came there and accidentally got covered up. And when they get covered up, it's like they're caught swimming. Their tentacles are perfect.
And aren't they upright?
Yeah, upright. And
if they were on their side, like if they died on the, you know, on right. their side, their tentacles would collapse to the ground.
Yeah, because they say, well, these formed gradually over, you know, gradual sedimentation. That's how fossils form. That's not how fossils form.
No.
The vast majority form abruptly in cataclysmic events, catching creatures right in the process of being creatures.
That's right. In fact, evolutionists now, it says in this article, evolutionary scientists have recently done an about-face on the Burgess Shale where they found some of these jellyfish.
Mm-hmm.
They now say that the layers of fine sediment were deposited in a rush.
In a rush, that's right. And so just a couple other points about this. Now, I have to add this Box Canyon in Idaho to the list of examples where features that formed over millions of years, turns out the geologists, evolutionists say, oh, we were wrong, they formed rapidly. Add to the Heart Mountain detachment up by Yellowstone, add to the strata with the petrified trees, add to Carlsbad Cavern, add this in Papua New Guinea, the Lahir gold deposit, which evolutionists always assumed took millions of years to form. But geologists now say, and these are mainstream secular atheist evolutionist geologists, they have evidence they formed in years or even in just hours. Just hours.
And I think we talked about that a month ago or so on one of the shows.
Yeah, that's right. And so now at this Box Canyon with the evidence that's always been there, and it's not like microscopic evidence, it's so obvious that this formed cataclysmically. The same thing with the Grand Canyon. The same thing with the Grand Canyon. It didn't form over millions of years by that little Colorado River carrying silt uphill. It didn't form that way. In those side canyons, where did they come from?
So water doesn't run uphill?
No, right. Right, exactly. So anyway, and the side canyons came because of the cataclysmic nature of the Grand Canyon, with the cataclysmic flooding, the breached dams of two massive inland lakes, Grand Lake and Hopi Lake, and it formed the Grand Canyon. And it drained. That whole region of the country was waterlogged, the ground, and the groundwater table was very high. And when the Grand Canyon was carved out, all that groundwater drained into the Grand Canyon, and that's what formed the side canyons. These regular, extraordinary, top-to-bottom side canyons, which the geologists have no explanation for.
That's right. And there's actually a group of evolution geologists, they call themselves neocatastrophists, that admit that the Grand Canyon was formed by some kind of water catastrophe. Mm-hmm. But it's not the majority opinion. They're still clinging to millions of right. years with the Grand Canyon.
And Walt Brown has done the absolute best job on his website, creationscience.com. Absolute best job of explaining the formation of the Grand Canyon. Just brilliant. Okay. So, Fred, that satisfies my need to expose the scam where everything took millions of years, and lo and behold, well, the evidence is pretty blatant. It happened rapidly.
That's right.
I like that. All right. How about, well, the next story that I have indicated is the bees. What research, these Asiatic honeybees and European honeybees, they split off evolutionarily speaking 7 million years ago. They've been apart.
They've been apart from 6 to 8 million years of evolution.
And what However, did the researchers do with these things?
Well, they found that they believed that they could still communicate with each other after 8 million years. Now, what mechanism do you think allowed them to do that? Was Al Gore around at the time to invent the Internet?
Yeah, right. For 7 million years of being separate evolutionarily, they must have continued to communicate because, you know, human beings, if we get separated, our languages change. We have a hard time communicating. Well, bees communicate with their dance. They do this dance, and it tells other bees where to find food, for example. So researchers took these two different kinds of bees, Asiatic and European, and they put them together into the same colony. And lo and behold, after 7 million years, supposedly, of being apart, when the Asiatic honeybee does the dance and tells the European honeybees where the food is, they all fly out and they get it. They know what he's talking about. The dance hasn't changed in 7 million years. It's ridiculous.
It is. It's a fantasy fairy tale to say that these are millions of years old.
Yeah, and once again, the evolutionists say, and the quotes are always the same, they said that, you know, we're shocked. We're shocked. How can this be? We're surprised, and they call it this evolutionary stasis, exceptional evolutionary stasis. In other words, in all this time, it didn't change. And that's because all that time is make-believe. There was
well,
no
evolution has set up their theory not to be falsifiable. I like what Walter Remine said. He said it's like the fog as it adapts to the landscape. It's just like evolution explanations. They adapt no matter what the data says.
No matter what.
They will adapt the data. It's like a smorgasbord of answers. They don't really have answers.
Right.
The theory's been falsified, but they set it up in their verbiage so that it isn't. It sounds like their theory isn't falsified, but they don't set it up to be falsifiable.
Mm-hmm. And so it's like the soft tissue T-Rex. What's with the soft tissue that they found at Montana State University?
Yeah, one of the greatest discoveries really in the last 20 years is this T-Rex bone that they find unfossilized. And then they were able to extract protein from it now here in the last year was the mm-hmm. latest thing they were able to do.
Blood vessels.
It's a great witnessing tool because so many people believe this nonsense about dinosaurs being millions of years old and not contemporary with man. Yet you can go out on the internet and do a search of T-Rex and blood vessels, and you'll see these pictures. And you'll have to
stunning.
Ask yourself, they are stunning.
From
and you
National
have to ask,
Geographic, these are not just creationists,
yeah,
propaganda.
That's right. Discover Magazine, which is no friend of creationists, had a very candid admission in the title of their article that Mary Schweitzer, who discovered these, erased a line between the past and the present. That was the subtitle of the article. It's called Her Dangerous Discovery.
Yeah, a dangerous discovery. Why would finding soft tissue T-Rex be dangerous? Were they afraid of infecting reptiles with the disease? No, they were afraid because it showed that, hey, how could the tissue remain pliable, soft, over 65 million years buried in sandstone in Montana? How does that happen?
Yeah, and she said that the person who found this is a Christian, but she believes in millions of years. She's
yeah.
caught up in that indoctrination.
Yeah. She's
but she admitted,
Christian.
Yeah, she admitted that one of the scientists that she sent this data to said that he didn't believe it. And she goes, "What would you believe?" And he goes, "Nothing would make me believe that this bone is
nothing."
You know, yeah, nothing.
Yeah.
So that he's made up his mind despite the evidence. And why this is dangerous is it challenges their religion, Bob.
Right. Now you had a coworker just recently, within the last few weeks, who is an engineer and is an atheist, right?
Yeah, it's actually about a month ago. He's an atheist from China, engineer. He does firmware engineering. And we got to talking about origins, and he was an atheist again. And I asked him, you know, why are you an atheist? And then we started talking about origins. We started talking about really things related to engineering. You've got a computer in front of you that has a code. It has software. You have to write that code for this program to work. It doesn't work just because of the matter and the energy, which is what secular scientists say is all that there is. The universe is matter and energy.
And
well, that's
information.
Nonsense. You need information. The
information is not matter and energy.
Yeah, and I told him, you know, information science says that you have to have an information giver if there's information. There's no exceptions at all. And he started thinking about, well, how could you get a program, even just the syntax and the language itself, without someone there to program it? So then we started talking a lot about origins, and I showed him this T-Rex picture, and he exclaimed that there's no way that could be millions of years old. And we had a long conversation, maybe over 4 hours that night. I stayed late because all he wanted to do is talk about
this. So he's looking at the soft tissue, which you could find at National Geographic. You can find it all over the web. I Google soft tissue T-Rex pop up.
Yeah, it's
everywhere.
A great way to, you know, witness to people.
And people's eyes bulge in their sockets.
Yeah, because we're not showing them some creationist site that they would think is propaganda. This is stuff off of MSNBC,
yeah.
CNN, all covered this, even though they didn't really you know, they didn't put it on their front pages.
Like they should have.
They should have. It's important as a discovery as this was. Well, to make a long story short, this was a guy who said that he was an atheist, and he had been witnessed to before by Christians who told him about Jesus. Well, Jesus was foolishness to him, just like it said in the Bible, that the cross would be a foolishness to the Greeks and a stumbling block to the Jews. Now, the reason for that is the Jews already believed in a creator God, so Jesus was then just a stumbling block like he is for all of us at one point.
Mm-hmm.
But to the Greeks, who at that time were evolutionists, they were atheists, Jesus was foolishness because they didn't have the foundation in place. Well, once the foundation started to take hold with this person, over time, he started asking more about the Bible, and I'd share information about the Bible, about Jesus, the real Jesus. And to make a long story short, he eventually asked me if I'd give recommendations where he could go to a good church.
A good Christian church.
And he started doing that. He actually went to a meeting with me at Rocky Mountain Creation Fellowship.
Rocky Mountain Creation Fellowship.
And so creation evangelism works. It's a good technique, especially if somebody is an atheist. If you tell them Jesus loves them and he died on the cross for their sins, it's going to be foolishness to them. And it says that in the Bible. That's why this topic is so important,
yeah,
Bob.
Yeah, it's good to tell people that. And some people will respond to that because they intuitively realize that there is a creator God. But other people need evidence. In the book of Hebrews says faith is the evidence of things not seen.
Exactly.
So very exciting. We're almost out of time for this show. But Fred, so these bees, they have still doing the same dance after 7 million years of supposedly separate evolution. And National Geographic did a special, I think it was National Geographic, of amber. We saw it on TV a couple years ago. And a chunk of amber had dozens of species in it. And they thought this amber is from tens of millions of years ago. And the insects, not only did the insects not change over tens of millions of years, but their relationships to one another and their symbiotic relationships, how they do, they didn't change either over tens of millions of years. So this evolutionary stasis, this is bunk. There were not millions of years between these fossils forming and today. That soft tissue T-Rex didn't stay supple and soft, that little bits of tissue in it, in its thigh bone for millions of years. So, Fred, we've only covered a few of the news blurbs in this issue of Creation Magazine, but could we do another Real Science Friday program?
Sounds great. How about next Friday?
Whoa, okay, let's try to do that. We're looking at creation on the web. Their magazine, Creation, beautiful, glossy magazine. And for those who would like to help out Bob and Yart Live, if you subscribe to any of our subscription services, our Bible studies, sermons, televised classics, topical videos, we'll give you a subscription to the Journal of Creation or Creation Magazine. The journal is more technical.
More technical,
right?
But it's still very readable to the layperson.
Very readable. And Creation Magazine.
A lot more articles, too.
You could pick the technical one or the one for the general population. And we'll give you a free subscription to either. If you either purchase our science pack, you can call us or go to our website, kgov.com, or any Bob and Yart Live subscription service. Fred Williams, thanks for joining me.
Thanks for having me, Bob. It was great being here.
All right. So, and you can contact Fred to have him speak at an event in Colorado. Maybe he'll travel to your state. Just call Bob and Yart Live, 1-800-8-NYARDS. And Maranatha, what a great school, Maranatha.